I first could find contentment only in coming back to get a glimpse of my dear husband whom I had left on earth, for he grieved a very great deal after I went away. I did not think so much about this, of course, until after I was healed, rested and refreshed, and then I came to earth quite frequently. I sometimes come now to his room at home and he knows I am there. There is something that he carries in the back of his watch every day that keeps me very close to him indeed. He knows what this is. I shall never forget the dear days of our life on earth together, and he will be surprised, knowing even as he does of this world when he comes here and witnesses the beautiful home which I have helped to build for him. With my regards to this good circle, I am most truly, Rosa Miller. Next is, a message from Harvey Mott. The dear spirit Professor William Denton has very kindly invited me to write a little message for this book. I come with reverence and love into this cabinet, knowing the condition in which Mr. Abba sits and his sufferings and trial, for I was a materializing medium on earth, and remember well the ups and downs of such an existence. A medium's work and his life in itself are consecrated, and given from the first to the realm of the higher forces, and more mortals of earth who come to learn the truth of these wonderful instruments, should have a care and a sure tenderness, for the entranced medium is always at their mercy. Remember, there is no other place in all the universe to which you can go and learn of a future life for the soul. There are always instruments enough who can tell you of such a life, but the materializing medium is the only one who is the instrument through whom you can see the spirits face to face. The spirit world has only given the world a few of these sensitives, and now that I am on this side of life, I am doing what I can to help protect them. I say God bless all the pure mediums, whoever they are, and you as spiritualists, try to remember that the way to keep your mediums pure is not to demand too much of them. We will do all we can for you all on this side. With my regards and tender thoughts for my old friend and benefactor, Edward Butler, I am sincerely, signed, Harvey Mott, Opportunity. Denton. Friends. Do you know that your world is full of misplaced men? The pulpit has some that belongs by nature to the blacksmith shop. The plough has lost an excellent hand, and the bar has gained a dupe. Some physicians who are very successful in repairing health, would have been also successful in repairing houses. This is one reason why so many men fail of success. They are in the wrong place. You ask, how are you to know for what men are best fitted, and to what vocation they are adapted? Only through spiritual influences can you hope to determine for what avocation you are best fitted. If any deviation from a sense of honor or duty may be evidence that it is not the place for you, that evidence must be sought. No difference how attractive the position, how profitable the business, if conscience is involved, it is not the place for you. It is often said that opportunity knocks at your door but once. This is true, my friends of earth, so opportunity must decide, in a degree, a man's occupation. These opportunities come to you through the unseen forces. Opportunity is a convenient time or favorable occasion, and when once passed, may never come again. Success is the parent of success, and you go on to victory. But if you let the opportunity pass, you fail. Failure gives birth to failure, and your chance is lost. Some people imagine that opportunity is a golden chariot drawn by seeds of good luck, and someday they will pause for them as they tarry in the shade on life's roadside, and the spirit of fortune will pick them up and put them on cushioned seats and lay them on flower beds of ease, and push them on to success. Opportunity is no such thing, but simply an open door, with an invitation to come in. Friends, try to refrain from selfishness, for it is a sin in the eyes of the spirits. A man must learn before he can teach. You must have, before you can give. A true spiritualist is in harmony with himself. If you can better your condition and be of equal service to society and the world, you may do it. It is your duty to do it. If it is no violation of conscience and you can get a larger salary, it is your duty to accept. After having found your life work, settle down to steady toil, drawing your inspiration from nature's divine laws, and your work will be eternal. Some men lose their consciences in stock companies, or corporations. They do wrong in the aggregate and wash their hands in the waters of innocence. Friends, the man who does next to nothing takes credit to himself for what others have clone. He sometimes gives a penny in a collection, and then with an air of charming hypocrisy says, "See what we raised, $500. You do too much by committees, and not enough alone. No one's conscience, duty, development and reward, are blended with the great mass. You cannot enter the spirit world by committees, you cannot believe by proxy, you cannot escape responsibility by going to church. You will not die in companies. You will pass over the river one by one, you will wear your own crowns and not appear in borrowed array. A selfish man does not preserve his individuality, for his life is sure to grow less. He loses his friends, the world drops him, humanity shuns his society, and gives him the cold shoulder. He lives alone, dies alone. Let a young man start in life with the conviction that he is working for self, and the eyes of the spirits are upon him, and his every act will be significant of what he is. We ask, where is the miscreant that dares lift pen or voice against these spiritual truths, or attempt to rob it of its God-given laws? Our mission is the bettering of human condition in every direction. It comes to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, visit the sick and set you free. We challenge any man to prove to the contrary. The man has not lived, and does not live, who after carefully studying and investigating, honestly, candidly and sincerely, can rise up and declare our mission to be the aggravation of man's troubles, the increasing of his burdens, the intensifying of his suffering, the dwarfing of his intellect, an enslavement of his conscience, and the pollution of his affections. Death. There is no death. Dr. Reed. Friends, there is no minister of Christ who stands by the altar with the everlasting proof of another life where the weary may find rest, and the heavy laden be released of their burdens and the agitated mind and troubled heart be calmed by the peace of spirit, that passeth understanding. No, all is dark and dreary, to the poor struggling soul. The preacher would tell you, come to us all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and we will give you rest and peace, and then send you into the world. To ascertain the all-wise purposes of life, should be your first lesson. This is a question of vital importance, a point on which character and destiny are made to turn. This may throw some light on the question, may help you to a solution of the problem of life. We hope these words may embrace not only the fact that you are placed on earth, but for a mission. Vibration. Andrew Jackson Davis. The great law of vibration is inherent in, and stirs all life. In fact, there is no form of life but what is moved, and when giving expression to its inner being, this wonderful law takes its place in the first stirrings of being and expressive elements. Without vibration you would not be conscious of any stirring in the air, or of any visible sounds of nature in the atmosphere. For as sound travels so very swiftly, it must necessarily have some basic and underlying principle to manifest upon, and this same principle is vibration. The throbbing of your heart in your bosom is due to the vibratory currents passing and repassing through the elements of life itself, and fanning continually the functions of the human body into lively action. Place your fingertips, for example, on the crown of a hard hat in a room where there is any music being made, and your feeling, and the sense thereof will record instantly the rhythmic measures of the melody. The wave motions in the atmosphere collect very rapidly, and when their union is perfect or nearly so, they vibrate the sound tones freely into the air, and if you place your fingers on a hollow, hard substance you will instantly feel the record of the music making itself beneath your touch. So you will readily understand by this little illustration that vibration lives in everything that has life and finds expression of that life. In the verbal, spoken word of a mortal or spirit, there is a vibratory current that takes up the word's significance and carries it always to a place of recordance, be it in your world or ours, and this is the reason that at some future day in the eternal, you will find all your words and deeds in the aggregate recorded in the great psychic book of ether, and be they good or bad, Remember that they are precisely as you have expressed them at the time you gave them being. This will show conclusively that you will never find the law of vibration false, never erring, always the unchangeable significance of truth, comely or otherwise. This is the reason that spiritualism teaches to its followers the very importance of vibration and its laws, so that we may all tend to make our lives better and truer each day that we live, so that when you of earth come to meet the life eternal, you will not falter and be afraid of the past earth life deeds, words and thoughts, but will be ready to read this mighty record with clear and unflinching hearts, and with the light of hope and purity shining out of your eyes. You mount the stepladder of progression with the new strength of the everlasting. There are some mediumistic instruments in the world who are so finely and delicately attuned to every wave motion, that they can almost instantly on meeting a stranger, strike the rate of his or her vibration in such a manner as to be able to tell his or her good and bad qualities without coming into physical contact with either at all. Each human vibrates a little differently, for in some, the rate of vibratory motion is very swift, while in others it is immoderately slow. In some, vibration strikes a happy medium being neither too fast or too slow. In mediums the rate of vibration usually runs faster than in those undeveloped for such powers. For one reason they must necessarily be very sensitive in order to record spirit communication of any order, and persons of extreme sensitiveness usually vibrate with great power and rapidity. In the animal and vegetable kingdoms, vibration is much the same as it is in the human. As this great law stirs all life, we cannot fail to see it manifesting wherever we may be. When there is a communication desired by wire on earth between two parties when all conditions are propitious, then there must first be an even rate of vibration established in each receiving station before the communicating parties can achieve any result. Some spirits, when in the materialized form, receive a much more rapid vibration than they possessed in the material body, due from the current flowing from the circle. Then if the chance is to be a very quiet and constrained circle of sitters, the forms may simply be animated with a very slow and plodding vibration indeed. As an ocean current sways the glassy face of the deep and causes the water to raise itself into waves that grow and enlarge with redoubled energy each passing moment, so does the law of vibration stir into action all life and being. The whole throbbing pulse of every phase of life is brought into expression by this wonderful and unfailing law, vibration. As the tiniest leaf in the early spring peeps out to tremble in the soothing vibratory waves of the air, so does the mighty ocean thunder and sob, its great voice, shaking as it vibrates itself upon the human ear. A sketch dedicated to Daisy Dixie Rogers, Dr. John C. Culver. As I come tonight to give my blessing to this circle, I feel an overpowering sympathy for the people yet of Earth who are having to go through with the wrongs and errors of your world. I was also, of course, a mortal in the material world once, and I knew the struggles of coming up through the world's strife, and growing year by year into what your people call a self-made man. My father and mother went to the spirit world when I was very young, and I was left an orphan child to care for, and bring up my two small sisters, and one brother. But thank God, I never shirked my duty in the least so far as I was conscious. And in looking over the past, I am thankful indeed that the loving bands of angels in the hand of God kept me in the true way. I commenced the study of medicine when I was very young, and in years worked my way up to fame in the material sphere. But all this did not please me, and when I found that there was but little if any science in medicine, I was disgusted with what I termed my wasted life. But after I came to the spirit world, I soon saw the good of the knowledge I had gained, for in my earthly study of the higher branches of chemistry, I had learned to divine the higher color and magnetic vibration of the spiritual spheres, and so what I had gained had now become valuable indeed. The Star Circle have very kindly permitted me to give his sketch of my experience. With my unchanging devotion, I dedicate this to one now on earth, Daisy Dixie Rogers. I am most earnestly, Dr. John C. Culver. Peace on Earth. Lorenzo Abba. Friends, war has been one of the greatest curses of your world. Nations have met on the field, while thousands have rolled their garments in blood, and gone down to soldiers' graves, often to simply gratify the proud ambition of designing men. There will come a time when nations shall learn to war no more. You have large military academies established with large proportions, where the science and art of war are taught and men are educated to wield the sword, but, nations shall learn war no more, other and more satisfactory methods will be adopted to settle national difficulties. Then peace on earth will hold her sway, and then forget his brother man, to slay. Men will be so influenced by the spirit world, that the great law of love will prevail and cement all hearts with the golden chain of friendship which shall bind the world together. We know that the world will be renovated and purified by the spiritual forces. Considering the foregoing facts and many others that might be noticed, which will characterize that period, what a grand spectacle your world would present, almost like the haven of rest, and peace would dwell and all would wonder with delight. This will be a season of great peace and prosperity to spiritualism. True, much is yet to be done, but when you survey the past you will be astonished at the rapid march it has made in the past 70 years. You may well concede that the coming century will far exceed anything the world has ever witnessed. We see how intelligence is communicated from one part of your continent and of the world to the other, as on the wings of lightning. But nothing has been more rapid in its brilliant career than the glorious truth of spiritualism. Religion. John Wesley. In all ages religion has been the main motive power in the lives of men, as well as the historic movements of the world, and even those who are not religious, are moved in other directions, and are quite different from what religious people call religion. There is in every person some supreme idea or principle or tendency which pervades his soul and his sentiments, and dominates his entire conduct. This attitude is a product of spiritual growth. It develops from facts that no being is an isolated creature, but part of a greater whole. In your physical world it finds expression in gravitation. Spiritualism has a tendency to develop in thinking beings, into a world conception which is characterized by more or less definite views as to the nature and purpose of existence, and thereby dominates the conduct of man. Truth is not made by man, but truth existed before it was found. Spiritualism finds expression in the doctrine of all religions which is common to all in a certain phase of their development. The higher a religion ranges, the more it agrees with demonstrable truth, and the nobler will be its ethics. Truth is the best, the basic part of religion. And agreeing with truth, it leads to the right kind of action called morality. Superstition disagrees with truth, and leads to the wrong action. Spiritualism is akin to science insofar as both are devoted to truth. Science is accepted in confidence of its being the truth, and spiritualism means search for the truth. The methods of the search, and the results of it are the assured knowledge at a given time. Both spiritualism and science are devoted to truth. Spiritual science is becoming popular and is closely associated with the latest results of inquiry. Many are averse to spiritualism, and resent the critical spirit, and are not apartment to forget that their religion is based upon the theories of the past ages. The more education spreads, the better you learn to appreciate the relation of spiritualism to the needs of life. And when the masses know that spiritualism is religion in the making, all antagonism between spiritualism and present religion, that antagonism will disappear. The way of peace. Dina Maria Muloch Greig. Dear friends of earth, you must lay aside your cumbrous body. Then you are free. Then you will mount the chariot of eternal truth. A spirit leads the way. You go on up the pathway of light, on and on, up to the eternal realm of peace and happiness. The beautiful gate stands open. You enter the city of rest. Behold its streets of shining light, its walls of jasper, its sunny domes and starry pinnacles, the crystal river. See these crowns, glorious crowns, more brilliant than the sun, those palms, whose greenness never fades. There are your fathers and mothers, your children. They come to you clothed with eternal youth and unchanging beauty. And music from the spirit realm grand orchestra, rolls and reverberates and charms and melts away in the distance. Here is life. No funeral procession ever passed these streets. No orphan cry is ever heard in that happy spirit land. No widow ever weeps. There is your child, my brother and sister of earth. You thought it was lost forever, but here he is. Long parted friends meet to embrace and love forever. No death here, your lamp is lighted and never goes out. Used to live and love. The lies your boy, he is dying. Stoop and listen. He has a message for you. What is it? Tell mother I will meet her in the spirit world. Oh, what is spiritualism worth to the dying boy? Worth everything to that mother, whose heart went to the grave with her boy. Crime and bloodshed. Thomas Paine. My friends, look abroad upon your world, and what is the history of Christianity but degradation and crime? Look at the ignorance, the profanity, the licentiousness, the dishonesty and the intemperance that prevails, even in your own highly favored country. See the cruelty of the savages who roam over your western wilds. Contemplate, friends, the senseless mummeries and superstitious traditions of property. See the heathen mothers offer their own babes in sacrifice by throwing them into the river of the Ganges to appease the wrath of an angry god, rather than support their parents in old age. Witness the beastly licentiousness of idol worship, where crime, and lust of the most debasing character are the highest adoration, paid to heathen gods. In the general prevalence of ignorance, of infidelity, of fraud, of violence, of imposture, of licentiousness, you have too strong evidence of the truthfulness of these facts, and your first plea is for missionaries. Spirits are missionaries, no matter what position they occupy. Ashamed of his religion, Rev. James W. Canaan. It seems strange that some should be ashamed to be called a spiritualist. Spiritualism is a national religion in your country and it is incorporated in the Constitution, and it is incorporated in the hearts of people who embrace it. There are a few Jews who embrace spiritualism, many infidels, and in the West a few Mormons, but the overwhelming majority do not regard spiritualism as a revelation from the spirit world. There are many indeed, who do not profess to be its disciples, and who manifestly are not imbued with its spirit, but even these acquiesce locally or otherwise, in the general sentiment of their fellow men. So universal is this sentiment that anyone who opposes it, even if very quietly, makes himself conspicuous by these facts, and unless he is a church member of some sort, he loses the confidence of his neighbors, and if his opposition on the other hand is public and blatant, he acquiesces at once a good thought, but not an enviable reputation. Everybody knows this, and it is possible that there are some persons who are convinced of spiritualism, who conceal their belief from motive or policy. At any rate, so it is, that the whole air of your vast empire is laden with sentiments favorable to spiritualism, and in this sense, this religion may be said to be national. Nobody loses caste by identifying himself or herself with it, on the contrary, a man gains by this an advantage for himself, and for others. Yet for all of this, there are men and women who are not its disciples who would experience a sense of something of mortification, shall we call it shame? If it was suspected that they felt any personal interest in spiritualism. These men are not fools, they are very sensible men, they are not bad men, they are for the most part, moral men, they are good citizens, and kind neighbors, and amiable in the ordinary relations of life. They have been brought up under the influence of Christianity, and generally declare that they have great respect for it, and that they admire it, and that they believe that your world would be greatly benefited if everybody were the subject of its power. Yet let it be hinted that they feel any personal concern for spiritualism and they shrink away. They will speak of spiritualism in the most complimentary way so long as it is at a distance and in private and with someone whom they think will never lisp it to anyone, but let it be brought near to them, and especially if it be thought that they have a spiritual interest in it, and they blush. They are ashamed of it. They will attend its public meetings and seances, but take pains to explain by saying, "Oh, well, I go on my wife's account." They will even aid in paying its expenses, but will say, "Well, My wife wants me to do this and I never deny her anything, when I can help it. Now, why is all this? Why is it that a man is not ashamed for his wife to be a believer of spiritualism while he is ashamed to be one himself? Is it because he thinks there is something effeminate about it, a weakness that might be pardoned in a woman but that would be unbecoming in a man? He will admit, however, that man rises in the scale of honor and dignity the moment he becomes a spiritualist, yet he shrinks from being regarded as one himself. What can be the reason of this? Friends, we leave the question with you. A Jew who is half a Christian already is never ashamed of his religion. If he was suspected of being a Mahometan, he would say, "No, I am a Jew." A Mahometan is never ashamed of the prophets, and looks with disdain on those who are not his followers. The Hindus, who are the most intellectually gifted people on your earth, are not ashamed of their faith. Why should you be ashamed of spiritualism when it lifts the veil and brings you face to face with those you once loved on earth? No other religion can satisfy that longing heart for another life. Mediumship, ITS laws, conditions and results. John J. Ingalls. I am delighted to visit here tonight with the dear personages who form this delegation of the Star Circle. I have been invited to give something of my observations on mediumship by your good teacher and leader, Professor William Denton. While on Earth I knew practically nothing of psychology, but being a subject I was always very deeply interested in it, I have taken the opportunity which has so constantly and so graciously offered itself since my coming to this side of life. While I lived in the realm of Earth, I often thought and pondered on the other life, and wondered greatly as to the attainment of souls after death, for I always believed in another life than that of Earth, although I did not know it positively until I came over and became an inhabitant of the world that you call dreams. I often meditated, too, if the dead did return to the living and have converse with them, how and by what means was it accomplished? I knew that if it was possible for a return and converse, there was a way and means of truth and science. Gradually after the spiritual awakening after death, I began to be acquainted with many wonderfully intellectual spirits who seemed to come and go at will, to visit the different sphere, to even go to Earth and returning, tell of their missions of mercy to those still lingering in the troubled way. At last, I asked them by what means they found their way back to Earth. And the knowledge I gained by my simple question was that same knowledge which is today lifting thousands up out of the mire of destruction, want and deprivation. I have learned that as the earth is governed and controlled by certain laws of nature, so is the comings and goings of mortals and spirits in the earth and spiritual spheres. That each manifestation of spirit depends as much upon the potency of the medium or instrument, as the telegraphic message depends upon the tiny electric clicker which records so swiftly each intelligible message that is vibrated on its keys. Then if the wires between stations are crossed or down from a storm in the elements, there can be no message received. Just so with the delicate sensitive who sits for you in any phase of mediumship whatsoever. And let him be ever so highly and finely attuned for the very recording of each spirit voice or vibration, and let him place himself in the best of conditions personally, he can receive no message whatever, though there were 100 pouring in, if it so chance that the circle is crossed with inharmonious thoughts, or that there is a sudden break in that circle. For the circle surrounding him is the only wire he needs with which to vibrate, concentrate and fully grasp the waiting message. So you see, if this great current is broken by thought, action or spoken word, the little instrument will be inanimate as to giving off the messages you so anxiously wait to hear. In the more difficult phases of mediumship, known as physical phenomena, and more especially materialization, the spirit forms under these adverse conditions would not only fail to appear, but there is a possibility of injuring the medium, sometimes permanently. Many have really lost their earthly lives by some serious break of this nature, for when their inner sensitiveness is keyed up to its highest and most delicate pitch to receive the spiritual, there is danger of snapping their vitality in an instant unless perfect harmony is observed. Mediums and more especially physical ones are when in trance or spiritually negative conditions, very susceptible to all varying conditions of the elements. For instance, When there is an electric storm, it has a direct effect on the materializing medium if he is in a trance at the time, and many have received such swift and terrible shocks from lightning that it has proven their undoing.